Special guests are always good. Speaking of special guests, we've got special guests here today. Let's get this thing started. I'm Jeff Sengpil, CTO at Keycode Media, and we're going to be having a chat about government video. Get started. We're going to have everyone introduce themselves. We're going to start at the far end, and then when we get to this close side, Josh is also going to tell us what kind of programming the city of Novi generally handles.
Challenge, yeah.
Exactly. So, who are you?
John Rutherford with Keycode Media, pre-sales engineer. Was excited to get involved in the City of Novi project.
He's the guy who's in charge of audio.
Just. When you walk away before the mic check, Kelly Gottesman, Keycode Media, senior project engineer. Had a great time working with Josh over here at City of Novi.
And I'm Josh Busher. I'm the senior video production specialist with City of Novi. And we are a public education government station. If everyone knows where Novi is, northwest of here in Detroit. And we do all sorts of programming. We run council meetings. We do programming for social media. We do a podcast now. That's our new big hot thing because everyone wants to have a podcast.
I'd like a podcast.
You want to be on the show?
Sure. Why not?
I'll get you in touch with some people. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's what we do pretty much. It's dry. It's government stuff, but it's communicating with our residents. And I think people can relate to that, I think.
Definitely. And, you know, we're seeing the upgrade of your control room and studio spaces for the city. Really impressive. Can you share how this project came about and what were the main objectives behind it?
Sure. So if people don't know, we are like as a PEG channel, we get funded by PEG fees, which are that little taxes, not taxes, fees that we as a city charge to cable providers. So it's up to 5%. So when cable companies want to come run their lines, they have to go through city-owned property, and as that result, we get to collect a pool of money that fills up our bucket called PEG fees. So we had a little bit of money saved up for various reasons. Then back in like 2019, they passed a law that we can no longer draw our salaries through PEG fees. So we started getting pulled from the general fund, which means that we had this big pool of money that kept growing and growing and growing. And with PEG fees, you can only spend that on like certain capital expenditures. So things that we can communicate to our residents are, like the studio fits that bill. So we had a bucket of nearly $1.5 million that we had, you know, what are we going to do with this? What can we grow? And we just formed our own studio. So there's people in the audience that used to work for the city, my boy Frank up front. And we came in and got rid of our old studio. So we were just shooting in the field the whole time. So, you know, instead of going to this field and setting up lights and breaking down and all that time extra to come on shoots, we decided, you know, we're going to look at building some space inside near us that we can, you know, record all of our stuff at. So to make things easier on us, to make us more prolific as we, you know, try to communicate with residents and beyond, we ended up, you know, let's build a studio. So it was me and my partner, Damon, at the time, who has since moved out of the video world. We were looking at spaces in the city and what we could do. And we came across this room that you can see behind me. Pretty much the room we picked, it's strange, but it's the room with the tallest ceiling. It's similar to this place. Like, this ceiling is probably actually taller than what we have in our studio. What do you guys, is that accurate?
What?
Close, yeah. So it's a room like this. It's a little strange. It's a little odd. And, you know, when we started conceptualizing what are we going to do with this money, let's build a studio, then came to NAB in Las Vegas. I think that's where I met John for the first time. And that's where I met Kelly eventually, I think last year or year after that. And then, so we started conceptualizing and meeting with you guys, who we met through Creative Dimensions, who is now Pinnacle. They're just our set building company. So the people we contacted that built this wonderful set that you see behind me, they do top-notch stuff. They work on NFL team sets. They work on like things based out of Connecticut, so ESPN. And you can check them out. They do a bunch of really cool stuff. But through Pinnacle, we met you guys here at Keycode, and then we were rolling.
Awesome. So the project seems to have involved quite a few components. Can you walk us through each phase of the upgrade and how it came together with the overall timeline? And feel free to pick on these gentlemen to kick in as well.
Sure. So we started, like, we had the idea. We had a space in mind, and we knew we wanted to build a studio. So talk about what kind of shows do we make. Our biggest show and our most popular show, I guess not popular, but the show we produce the most is called After the Gavel. It's just a recap of our city council meetings. So if anyone knows and works in government or has been involved in government, city council meetings can go on 1, 2, 3, 4 hours, and no one wants to sit and sift through all that content to see what's going on with the government. So that show is just like a really quick 2-minute way to compress that and then deliver to the residents. So you can watch this 2-minute video to recap things. So we decided we need to build a set studio with a desk and, you know, maybe a green screen wall. And we want to do stand-ups, we want to do sit-downs and kind of conceptualize all of that. So as the first started getting underway, like the first thing we did was just go map the room. And then we came out and sort of drew where we wanted things to go or things we had ideas. It was kind of a living sandbox, if you will. And that's what we tried to build, was a sandbox that can change. As you can see, like all the panels change colors. We can program different looks for different things. So it's not just us turn it on and you can kind of customize it a little bit. So the first step was to identify a space, then sort of start drawing out ideas. We met with you guys and through Creative Dimensions. I'm going to keep calling them Creative Dimensions because at the time they were Creative Dimensions. They started sending us rendering. So we met a couple times over Zoom to go with some basic concepts and lay it out and what we're going to do with lights and control rooms and all that sort of stuff. Then once that was like sort of finalized, once we had a plan, then getting you guys out to look at the space and tell us what's feasible. And then we essentially let you guys engineer it for the most part, if that's correct. Yeah. You want to speak on that sort of side of it?
Well, I'll just start by saying, excuse me, I ate lunch really fast. I knew I was going to burp breaks. Anyway.
Nice.
As I've said before, from our standpoint, it's great when you engage with the client at the early stages and there's a clear vision of where they want to go. Because then you just kind of work backwards from that. You know, Josh and his team have a lot of forward thinking ideas, you know, some great experience to bring to the table. So it was a very collaborative design phase, if you will, with regards to the different pieces of equipment that would be needed to make this project work the way they had envisioned it. And that kind of back and forth. And then folding in the CD/Pinnacle team, again, was that perfect triad. We've done other projects with those folks. They're great to work with. So because there's a level of integration in a set design like you're seeing behind us with regards to the video panels and even the lighting and how all that gets controlled and gets fed. So it was kind of just a organic process that we worked through because we came to the table with some obvious experience and ideas of the technology, and everybody kind of had their role in regards to finalizing the design and then implementing that.
Yeah, so I agree. Everything was very collaborative. You guys seem to have a really good partnership with CD/Pinnacle, and that really helped because we could just hand them off and be like, okay, how's this TV going to fit into our set? So you guys are getting the TVs, this huge 92-inch panel, is that right? Yeah, and that's the big thing you see in the corner. It's just a TV. We were talking about a video wall. We went to NAB. We're like, video walls are cool. Everyone's using them this year. And they eventually pared it down, like, let's just get a TV. Like, that's the easiest, most cost-effective way to do this. Then once that happened, so they built the set. Creative Dimensions built this giant hole, and like, this is where the TV would go. And so they passed it off to you guys. They're like, how are you going to like hook this up? How are you going to get the tilt right? How are you going to, you know, install it? And you guys just kind of took off from there. And, you know, once the holes were plugged, essentially, then we were just engineering at that point. We're just plugging things in and making sure everything worked. So the set, like the biggest obstacle that we, I guess, didn't think of initially was electrical. We're just like, yeah, everything, you know, we're going to use LEDs. It's not going to draw that much power. So we had everything kind of ready to roll. We were going to come in and start in, like, I think it was November or October that the initial install was supposed to start. But then we come to realize we need to upgrade our transformers and electricity and all this other stuff that we need to power the studio and make sure that, you know, we have enough headroom if something happens. So once electricity was taken care of by our facilities team, that gave us the sort of bandwidth to go in and start attacking. So that came in. Then first thing we did was paint all the walls black. First of all, this whole room that you kind of see behind me used to be just election storage. It was full to the brim, full of all the stuff of voter records and all the stuff that, you know, we need to store as a city. So moved that out of there, cleared the room out, painted all the walls black, gutted the whole place. And then Creative Dimensions came in and they just started installing the set. So what you see as a set is actually just a flat. It's just a piece of wood that is built up. So the wood panels that you see in the bricks are just like theatrical sets, if you will. That's not real. Some of the wood is just fabric, and some of the bricks you see, it's like they're hand painted. So they went in Connecticut and they hand painted all this stuff to make it look real and make it seem like a sort of urban-y loft space, because that was sort of the vision we had in mind. So once they had this like sort of look established, then they went crazy painting and bringing things out this way. So then We did the floor. We redid the floor. It used to be just concrete, if I remember, and the floor is just vinyl. So it's just a little strip of vinyl that makes it seem like wood. It's very theatrical. I mean, nothing is what you see. There's not like real things in there. Everything is just so it looks good on camera. And that's what they sort of provide, I guess.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yes, that's me usually. But now here I am in front of the curtain.
Awesome. Kelly, were there any challenges with the...
Well, we coordinated our part of the installation. CD was rolling up like December 15th, vaguely, I remember. And we wanted to be there to help assist in whatever capacity so that we could roll in behind them and start doing... We didn't want to put cameras or anything in the space. It is kind of small until they got done with the construction. And one of the things they realized when they got there was that the grid for the lighting was just 1 foot, 12 inches, a little too low.
Just a little bit.
The side
that throws enough. Yeah, the whole set need to come up, and we need to raise the grid again. It was a big mess.
Another challenge, you know, you just, okay, someone didn't measure it right or whatever, but we needed to, they couldn't finish that part of the set, so they had to come back after the grid was lifted. Yep, that big hole for the 92-inch TV,
That's my favorite part of the set.
That's a planar, which is 205 pounds. So you have to figure out what kind of, you know, mount you're going to use that can tilt, that can be pushed back in the wall. So that was tricky. And I found one pretty cheap, actually. And it was, I had to call about it, right? I'm like, you say this is going to hold 250 pounds, right? But the price is like $400. Something's not right here. Yeah, it worked. And anyways, so those kinds of challenges. We had to get, you know, whips, if you will, for SDI feeds, Cat 6 feeds to all the screens, to the three PTZ cameras that they have in there. We had to get a little creative with some wireless, it's called a show baby for DMX, so that we didn't have other additional cables just for lighting on the desk and the wild monitor.
Yep.
And so, and then Josh is like, well, we want to do 4K. And we're like, well, we're not quite there with that. So we had to re-kind of engineer the signal flow for 12G all the way through, which, you know, it, sometimes that could be a pretty big hiccup in a project. Well, with Josh and his folks and us around the table, it's just a conversation of how we're going to do it and get it kind of into a solution mindset of, okay, what's possible, what's not possible, what do we have that will work and won't work. So we identified pieces and we just kind of swapped some stuff out. It prolonged the delivery, if you will, for just a minute, but I think you're happy with everything.
Yeah, 100%. That in the end, it's the right call. So yeah.
And he's already producing a ton of content out of the space. Everybody seems to be happy over there, and
we're very happy. Yeah,
it's pretty unique. If you saw it before the studio went in, it was truly just a closet. You know what I mean? You're like, okay, there's a bathroom over here. What are you going to do when you're live? You know, and
we're going to lock the door and not let people flush the toilet because the pipes go through the studio.
Yeah, so it's not your like traditional studio, but considerations were made to accommodate this, and I think CD knocked it out of the park. We're really happy with always their work. A nice finish to the studio.
It's always good to finish strong. So we were chatting a little bit before camera choice, who went with Sony's, and the video switcher's choice was a little unexpected. Can you talk about those two choices?
So we were sort of imagining back in the sort of design and conceptualization stage, if you will. One, I guess I'll talk about cameras first. We were already sort of married into the Sony ecosystem, and we had a bunch of old Sony A7 III's and A7 IVs and a bunch of Sony glass. And I like shooting on Sony's. I've shot Sony, Panasonic, Canon. They're all of the other their own strengths and weaknesses, if you will. Sony is the biggest, I think, bang for your buck. And you know, personally, at home I shoot Canon, but at work I shoot Sony. I like things about them both. But we went with Sony because we're already tied into the ecosystem. We want to make everything easy for us. So we can go out in the field, you know, break out the FX6, break out the A7 IV, and use the same lenses, same setup as we do in the studio with the FR7s. Everything is the same sensor. So if you're getting confused, all three of these cameras have the same sensor. So in theory, it all looks the same. It's just a different way to control it. The FR7s are just PTZs that you can control. We're two people, so It's like I'm TDing slash running audio slash running cameras. And how do you do that with just one person or one and a half people? So my partner's going to prompt, you know? So we needed to go PTZ in that route. But if we have more people, you know, we have the FX6s. We go in the field, we can go shoot things and go live. So that's why I went with Sony primarily. And we're pretty happy with them. I like Sony stuff. I think it looks good. It's very modern, trendy, and 4K as you guys were talking about. So, yeah.
And on the video switcher side?
Switcher side. So when we were talking about the room initially, I think we originally had a Blackmagic picked out or something. And then we were talking about how are we going to get programming content to the screens? How are we going to play back our video packages and loops and things on the screens? And they're like, let's just go TriCaster. And I've had experience with TriCaster in the past. So I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. So we spec'd out a TriCaster. I think we got the 800. Is that right? TC1. Oh, we had an 800 once upon a time. Yeah, TC1. Then we plugged it in. We have a little sort of show cart, if you will, like a portable thing on wheels that we would wheel out to events. We have an audio board and switcher and camera control. Everything is all tied into one unit. So we installed the TriCaster. Kelly came out and hooked everything up, and everything was running. But for whatever reason, it was just 1080. And I was like, what's going on? We just upgraded all the cables, you know. Why is it like this? Why is it only 1080? And come to find out that TriCaster TC1, you can only do 4K through NDI, which is fine, but we didn't run NDI. So we had to come up with some solutions on the fly because we have this TriCaster and we were like, well, how are we going to do this? So we sat down one day and I'm like, well, we have a Blackmagic Atom, I think ME2 in our console control room, which we use for live meetings. That was luckily we had upgraded enough to be 4K compatible back in the future. So I'm like, here, you're like, we'll give it to Kelly and JT and, you know, we'll let you guys figure it out and James, and then you guys can plug in the Blackmagic. I'll do the TriCaster in the control room. And luckily that sort of worked out. So that plug and play method solved a lot of problems, because that's what I like when problems arise. It's not like, oh, let's go blame people. Let's go, why did we not engineer this? Like, let's solve the problem. Like, why can't we just, you know, fix it? So we did that. We swapped them and it works for both worlds now. So now we have a nice Blackmagic that we control with HyperDecks and mini recorders that play content to the screens on a loop, and that's how we play things. So it's simple, and we have some macros installed so we can switch between like a PC to show like images and things, or looping video walls. So I press a button and boom, it switches, and I press it again, it's back. So it's hard to do as one person, but that's why we did it. We sort of engineered the whole studio to be, you know, to get rid of all the positions, if you will. So there's people like me and my partner who just wear all the hats and one-man bandit pretty much.
It's good to have that many hats sometimes.
Sometimes it's a lot of hats to wear your neck. Yeah, sort of
times it's a little bit warm, yeah, during production.
Correct, yeah.
Break a sweat. So you went with a 12G solution for the council chamber. Can you walk me through that decision-making and what that meant for the overall design and implementation?
Yeah, so the 12G actually came into our studio. So talking with Kelly, I think you were the one who recommended, you know, when we had to do redo the cables all over again. I think we had 3Gs originally spec'd out, which can only do 1080 if you want to get technical. 6G, you could do 4K, and 12G, you can do like 8K, which, well, I don't know, I'm not even going to dream of when we're moving to 8K world, because that's, I think, in my opinion, a couple years off. But we went with 12G just to give us some headroom in the studio itself. So every screen that you see, every camera is all 12G. And we went with that just because we're trying to build signal flow into the future. And we don't really know what kind of content we're going to show on screens. We don't know, you know, what their human retina eye can see and measuring, well, like cameras and all that stuff. But we went with 12G just because we want to get 4K. And it's not like we're pushing like 4K content to our channel or public access local. It's like a fuzzy little thing. It's like standard definition. But no one, like, in my opinion, no one cares about our TV channel. It's all social media. It's all digital, which is why 4K was important to me. So,
yep. And the 6G does 4K 30. 12G does 4K 60. So you're, yes, probably doing 59.94, right?
We're not doing 59.94. We're doing 30. So,
oh, there you go. Beyond the components like the switcher with the ATEM and the Sony PTZ cameras, what other highlights are there on upgrades that were made to the control room and studio spaces? You know, other improvements. What's been the most impact for you?
So the biggest thing to do and what we wanted to eliminate when we started building the studio was setting up. So breaking down, setting up lights, using our aperture stuff and going to the field. Looks great, yeah, but it takes so much time to go pack up and break down. So honestly, the biggest thing, and one of my other favorite parts of the studio, we had a company called Redwood come up and do our lighting grid. It's all wireless, or parts of it are wireless DMX. So there's two different universes, if you will. It's the color side on the walls that we can, like I said, change all the different colors. But then we just go to the computer, we raise this little slider, and we have lights set to preset levels. So you just come in and boom, we're ready to roll. So the studio, you know, with a little bit of like foresight, it could be ready in 10 minutes and we're ready to bring in talent. And so we have that sort of aspect that just makes life easier for me, where I'm not on my hands and knees, you know, getting C-stands out and wheeling all the stuff around and breaking my back. So yeah, that's been the biggest difference to me, is eliminating that breakdown setup time.
Ease of use. So when you look ahead, what future programming initiatives or distribution platforms is the city of Novi considering exploring? Any new technical avenues that you're excited to get into?
So like I've been saying, the podcast is our new favorite toy. So as we work primarily in communications, so getting things out to residents and letting, like, so my boss wants to come in and run her podcast, and she could talk about whatever she wants to talk about on the podcast. She could bring in a guest. It doesn't have to be scripted. They can have an off-the-cuff, long-form like conversation, which, you know, everyone listens to podcasts now. It's pretty ubiquitous. So from that podcast, we took that sort of model of, let's just clip out segments of the podcast. So if we want to get a promo for an event coming up, or you want to highlight some fun interaction that they had and just throw a couple B-rolls over it, then we're translating that podcast into vertical videos and we're putting out reels. So that's I think, when you think about, I guess, what direction we're going in as an industry, like, I just want you guys to think about, like, what do you do when you go home? Do you go watch nice landscape stuff? You watch Netflix on 4K? Like, as a government, no one's going to watch us on a big screen. And if we're going to even get any sort of reach and pull and all, it's got to be where people are going. So I find myself, too, like, if I have nothing to do, I'm going to watch some reels. And I'm like, why am I doing this? Why am I watching this brain rot stuff? But you got to get over the fact that you're not making cinematic masterpieces, and that's how people are going to watch your content. They're not going to flip their phone to watch, oh, look how nice this shot looks. Landscape, it doesn't matter. So getting the podcast going where we can produce out content, we can clip out two or three segments a week. So we have a long form, you know, 15, 20 minute long podcast, then two or three segments from that, that's four or five videos. And that's way more prolific. So we used to be one video a week. Now we're at like four or five videos, if you will. And that's how people are finding it. We're finding engagement go up, our watch time's going up, subscribers, all the metrics are going up, because that's the sort of direction that I think we're trending in. That's where we want to go.
And your watchers' dopamine levels are going up, which is,
yes,
even better.
That's the most important part.
Yes. Oh, I feel great. I'm informed and I feel great. Are you, any plans for Instagram, TikTok?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not a TikTok man myself. I can't. There's certain things in life that I think are too sticky and too addictive. TikTok is one of them. Sushi is the other one. So, like, I was like, for the longest time, like, I'm never going to eat sushi because I'm going to fall off the deep end and love sushi. I eat sushi all the time now. It's the same thing with TikTok. I'm like, you know, I'll just let it go. It's fine. But Instagram and Facebook Reels are the same thing. Even YouTube Shorts. Our YouTube Shorts games are popping off recently. And we sort of find that when you publish something on YouTube Shorts or any sort of reel, like, it reaches a certain amount. They literally want you to test your video. So they'll give you fair play with every other video that's been produced in your little swipe up algorithm. And then depending on how much people watch it and people swipe away, they'll either keep boosting or not. So it's a level playing field for us as a small-time government channel to try to get eyeballs, you know, not through subscribers and typical models. Just sort of play the algorithm, if you will.
So you described what you went through on, you know, securing the PEG funding. The finance side is always a big deal for folks who are in government. Any insight for others who are seeking funding for those similar sort of upgrades of their facilities? Any specific strategies or avenues that you know of that are particularly effective?
So we in Novi, we're fortunate. People know who Novi is and what Novi is. It's a very well-off place. And we know we're fortunate enough to kind of play with that pool of money and you do with it what we do and build this amazing space. Not awful space, pardon me.
Awesome space.
Awesome space. That's the word I was looking for. How'd you know? So the PEG fund, I sort of hit on it initially. Based on the law change in 2019, if you're in government video, you know that your budget for expenses and equipment is going up and you can't draw salaries out from that anymore. So just hold off on buying things, let that pool of money grow and build. And you don't need, like, the studio is great and it makes things life easier for us, but you can build it as simple as space. All you need is a camera, microphone, lights, you know, make a little like artificial set, if you will. And you have the same stuff that we do. Is it going to look exactly the same? Yes and no, but it's way cheaper, and that's the same medium. You can copy this formula. It's like, it's not like I patented and trademarked, hey, let's make a podcast and make reels out of it. No, we're just doing what everybody else is doing. So pay attention to what's out there, I guess, and sort of learn to work with what you got and try to optimize yourself every day. That's my sort of takeaway from this? Financing is hard. Yeah. I don't know if you guys want to touch on that.
Well, I just wanted to add to that, that, you know, another approach that we take with clients that are running into budgetary issues is looking at a way to phase a plan out over time, right? Over multiple years. So if you have a plan, then you work towards that plan. And we sit down collectively and determine what are the critical pieces that need to be done in year one, what can then be added in year two, year three, et cetera. Now, of course, technology changes over time, nonstop, but at least if there's a plan, you're just adjusting that plan based on the new technology that comes up. But more importantly, if for some reason additional monies become available, again, there's a plan. There's a shopping list ready. So things can be evolved over time to kind of counteract that financial challenge when it's a CapEx budget.
And the other fun point about CapEx is cloud is a no-go because it's all OpEx. So if you got peg money, it's going to be physical gear.
Yeah, that's physical space, physical gear, and that's what it can go to. Yeah, so it's tough because, you know, one, you still have to draw your salary. You still have to get the money and pay things. But now when we, you know, you guys are perfect for physical gear. This is what you guys do at Keycode.
But the other part of that is that you have to have the support from upper admin and pitch your plan, if you will, based on your revenue or resources that you have and garnish that kind of support in-house or even out of house to leverage, you know, yeah, you might have that pool of money, but it could be split in a lot of different ways. You know, the ease of use that you were talking about and Jeff mentioned too, we're seeing that a lot in some of the medium-sized studios where you've got two or three people that have to wear all the different hats. So, you know, the PTZs are a solution, but a lot of the automation stuff that we're seeing too, a lot of things that are done through apps, controlling lights, controlling a lot of different functionality that you would have in the past a stationary position for or a dedicated position for. You know, we've got Q scripts in here. Each
love program. The Q scripts. Yeah. Those things are, yeah. I should have highlighted those more. Just the feel of the controller, I can't even begin to describe unless you use it. If you try to teleprompt on anything other than like a controller in the past, when you switch to controller for the first time, it's just, yeah, it's nice.
Chef's kiss.
And he even has a photo wall in there too, so that, you know, it's a multi-use space. I think when you're trying to get money or leverage the spaces that you have, how can you build or envision multi-use into that, you know, space that has now been commandeered for your project?
Yeah, we were lucky like to get leadership on board with us early on, and they wanted to do this. So as a government facility, we can't like have the public come in and use our stuff, or we can't sell things to businesses, or if you want to run a podcast, we can't just give you the space. What we can do, and what we're at least trying to plan to do, is go G2G, sell to other governments. So if we're the best government studio in the area, you know, we can get other townships come in. Hey, we want to do, you know, a city council recap show for you, or you want to do a podcast, we can sell to that. So that's another way to sort of finance and pitch this idea to leadership and management that, hey, like, it's not just like this sync to communicate with residents, like we can go to other governments. So there's other ways to get creative with money. And it's hard because we're government, and, you know, everyone say my tax dollars, blah, blah, blah. The biggest thing about this project and what my boss loves to say is none of this was tax money. $0 were used tax money besides what I draw my salary through. So that's fine.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about the evolution of programming and some of the challenges that face folks in government video. Where do you see the evolution of programming going? You've talked a little bit about this. What strategies have you implemented that have been successful? And what other challenges are there out there for folks who are doing government video?
So government, if you guys know, is very dry. No one wants to watch government programming. No one wants to... The government doesn't have a feel-good vibe out there. When you think about the government, you're like, ugh, the big bad government. So the biggest challenge for us is sort of getting our content, get eyes on it. And the best way that I found to do that is to show personality. Highlight and showcase all of our employees. They're all humans. They're all people. And they all have their own lives and aspirations and fun things and opinions. So focusing on that and showing that, you know, hey, yeah, we are the government, but we're just people. At the end of the day, we're just like you. And that can sort of relate people and draw us in. I sort of touched on the content side already, what we're doing with reels and podcasts and all that stuff. But we used to do, you know, package shows. You go out and sit down, interview, get some B-roll, slap it together, 2-3 minute long piece. And, you know, we kind of saw that trailing off recently with our metrics and views, and no one wants to sit down and watch that sort of content as opposed to a reel or something sexier or, you know, more fun and engaging. So is it sleazy? Maybe, but I think that's the way people are going. And I honestly, you know, you got to get rid of the ego. You got to get rid of the cinematic eye for things. You can still shoot wonderful, creative, awesome, brilliant, lit stuff, but the way it's delivered and the way people consume, you have to meet them halfway at least, or if not all the way. So
yeah, it's not all C-SPAN.
Yeah, well, we are. We used to joke. So I used to work for the state of Tennessee. We would call ourselves T-SPAN, you know, Tennessee SPAN. But that's, yeah, a little inside joke.
Very good. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us talking about the city of Novi and what you're doing. And if there's any questions, please have a chat with these fine folks afterwards. Thank you for attending our fun session.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow Key Code Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV, broadcast, and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.